In these daily programs, we're in search of answers to the great questions which concern all of us, those matters which affect our ultimate destiny as human beings. Who are we as human persons? Are we immortal souls living in corruptible bodies? Or are we candidates to receive immortality as a gift from a generous God who wants to share his endless life with us? The Bible makes it quite clear that there's nothing in man which automatically makes him a never-dying creature. The idea of the immortality of the soul comes from pagan philosophy, but has infiltrated the Christian church and has caused no end of confusion. The idea that we humans have something in us which cannot die, but rather survives death consciously, should be banished from our thinking if we really want to understand Jesus and the apostles. You see, Jesus was not a student of Greek philosophy. But our Western culture has been deeply influenced by concepts drawn from Plato's idea of the nature of man. But we Christians should be interested in what Jesus taught about our destiny. And what he taught was solidly based on the Old Testament revelation from God. That's to say, Jesus knew the book of Genesis and believed what it said about the origin of man. Jesus knew that both men and the animals were created as living, breathing creatures. And he knew that death for man meant returning to the dust from which God made us. And he knew, too, that when we die, the breath of life which animates us is simply withdrawn. At that point, we sink into unconscious sleep. Our only hope of living again is via the resurrection to immortality, which has not happened yet, except, of course, in the case of Jesus, who has been an immortal person for some 2,000 years. A great key to understanding the Bible is the knowledge that the future resurrection is the gateway to life again and life forever. There is no other way of attaining immortality. It's only common sense that Christians should be properly informed about our prospect of living forever. Jesus appeals to us with these words: "What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own life?" Mark 8:36. In other words, the most important thing a man can do is to make sure his life is permanently preserved. Otherwise, after the proverbial 70, that's going to be the end. "The great thing," said Jesus, "is to make provision for eternity. If you conquer the whole world now, or make $1,000,000, you're only going to be able to benefit from it for a short time. But what about your chances beyond the grave? That's what we need to be concentrating on in this life. After all, this life is a preparation for eternity. To neglect this present time of preparation is to court disaster. To ignore eternity and live only for the present is to miss out on the wonderful opportunity which God offers us, the opportunity of gaining an endless life." Jesus said in Mark 8:37, "What can a man give to buy himself back? What price can you pay to redeem yourself?" You see, the point is that as human beings, we are mortal. We are going to die. So we are caught in a difficult predicament. There's nothing we can do to buy ourselves back. In other words, to keep ourselves out of death permanently. But the good news of the Christian religion is that God has provided a way for the impossible to happen. God has provided his unique Son to buy us back from inevitable death and to open up for us a glorious future life forever. What an intriguing and exciting prospect. Here we are trapped by our own mortality. We're bound to die. But Jesus was generous enough to step in on our behalf and die for us. That really is the greatest act of love. Imagine yourself doomed to die by crucifixion, a cruel death by torture. Then suddenly up steps a man who volunteers to be your stand-in on the cross. He offers himself in your place so that you don't have to die. Meditate on this theme often and ponder again the extraordinarily challenging words of Jesus when he said, "What can a man pay to buy himself back?" Mark 8:37. What can you pay to get back your life? The answer is there's nothing you can do. But Jesus, who was a perfect human person and the Son of God, gave his priceless life instead of you having to give it. This opens up a way for you to have life forever. That's the promise of the Christian gospel. It's the simplest yet profoundest idea. The death of Jesus as a substitute for us is at the heart of God's plan to grant immortality to those who accept God's invitation to live forever. The paradox is that many don't seem to be in the slightest bit interested in what God is doing. many seem to go carelessly on their way through life and not realizing that this life is going to come to an end. And then what? Well, we've been seeing that there is death after life. Now, I really meant that. It was not a slip of the tongue for life after death. There is death for all of us after life. But for those who have qualified, there is another life which will be gained through resurrection. That's to say, by coming back into life from death. Now, death in the Bible, from cover to cover, is simply a state of unconscious sleep. I've given many biblical texts to support that idea. All the kings of Israel were said to sleep with their ancestors when they died. Moses was told that he was going to fall asleep in death. Job, David, and Solomon all spoke of death as falling asleep and of resurrection as waking up from sleep. I remind you once again of perhaps the simplest and most beautiful account of the destiny of man found in the 12th chapter of the book of Daniel and verse 2. Here we are blessed by an inspired prophecy of what's going to happen when Jesus returns. We read this: many of those who are sleeping in the dust of the ground will awake, some to everlasting life. Now surely, we do not require an army of theologians to tell us what that means. It means just what it says. The dead are sleeping in the dust of the ground until they wake up in the resurrection. Nothing here is said about immortal souls rejoining their bodies. I want you to observe carefully how the Bible speaks of the resurrection. It says that those persons who are sleeping in the ground will awake. It does not say that bodies separated from souls were sleeping there. After all, bodies do not sleep. Persons do. Let me remind you of Paul's language about resurrection. He said this to his converts: whether we sleep or whether we are awake, we shall live with Jesus. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 10. Notice that he did not say, whether our bodies sleep or our bodies are awake, we shall live with Jesus. No, it is the whole person who sleeps. And so it's the whole person who lies in the dust of the ground until God rescues him from death by resurrection. Yesterday I was showing you that this view of the state of the dead is found quite often in the writings of the great Protestant reformer Martin Luther, and also by his famous contemporary William Tyndale. William Tyndale was actually martyred in Brussels in 1536 because of his opposition to the established church. Religion, as you will know if you've studied church history, has been most cruel to individuals who did not toe the party line. Jesus himself was opposed by the so-called orthodox systems of his day. Jesus complained that non-biblical tradition was the real power behind what the authorities were teaching, rather than the inspired revelation of God in the scriptures. William Tyndale likewise objected to the popular ideas circulating in the churches of his time. In particular, he strongly opposed the belief that the dead are conscious in purgatory. But he objected also to the idea that souls go to heaven when they die. If man can achieve bliss as a disembodied soul in heaven the moment he dies, what point is there, Tyndale argued, in God resurrecting them when Christ returns? It seemed to Tyndale and Luther that the doctrine of the immortal soul seriously undermined the great teaching of Jesus about the future resurrection. The question is, have we in the 20th century really paid attention to the protests of the leading Protestant reformers, Luther and Tyndale, in these matters of the destiny of man? Listen to these words of Martin Luther about what happens when we die. For just as a man who falls asleep and sleeps soundly until morning does not know what has happened to him when he wakes up, so we shall suddenly rise on the last day, and we shall know neither what death has been like or how we have come through it. End of quotation from Martin Luther. Martin Luther also said this about the state of the dead, commenting on Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, where the Bible speaks of there being no activity, planning, or wisdom in death. Martin Luther wrote, "This is another proof that the dead are insensible. Solomon thinks, therefore, that the dead are altogether asleep. They lie, not reckoning days or years, but when awakened will seem to themselves to have slept scarcely a moment. We Christians should regard death as a deep, strong sleep." End of quotation from Martin Luther. As for the idea which seems to have remained so popular in Christian circles about souls going to heaven while bodies lie in the grave, Luther had this to say: "It would take a foolish soul to desire its body when it was already in heaven." Evidently for Luther, the whole idea of escaping to heaven at death was an impossible notion. Luther protested that it was based on the pagan idea that man has a surviving immortal soul. To those who are trained in the biblical tradition that man is a mortal creature who ceases to live when he dies, Luther makes beautiful sense. But while Luther managed to escape the paganism that had for so long hidden itself in Christianity, we today seem not to want to extricate ourselves from that unfortunate influence. It's hard to resist the conclusion that we have not listened carefully either to the Bible or to Luther on this great question about what happens when we die. A revolution in our thinking is needed. We must examine our own beliefs and teachings in the light of the Scriptures. Certainly, if we call ourselves Protestants, we need to be accurately informed about what our Protestant leaders like Luther and Tyndale taught us about death and resurrection. That is only reasonable. It may be that some of this material is new to you. We would like to send you some literature for your further study. Contact us here at Atlanta Bible College at the address provided at the end of this broadcast. Meanwhile, join us again tomorrow as we continue our search for answers to the great questions of life and death which affect all of us, whoever we are. Until then, may God bless you in your search for truth.